Hello, and welcome to another podcast from HPS. In this episode, we continue with our theme around business excellence and sharing examples and stories of organizations that we've come across who've implemented innovative approaches to driving excellence throughout their organization. In the interview you're about to hear, I had the pleasure of catching up with Chris Dunwald from Scenic World. Scenic World is a well-known tourist destination here in the Australian Blue Mountains region, and Chris is their COO. I interviewed Chris at their offices. Chris, thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today. Chris, for listeners unlucky enough not to have visited Scenic World and here in the beautiful Blue Mountains National Park, can you give a brief outline to Scenic World and how it all began?
Sure, great. First of all, thanks for having me. Look, Scenic World is a third-generation family-owned business. We started in 1945, so we are previously an old coal mine. So coal, shale used to be brought out of the valley via the what is now the steepest railway in the world, the Scenic Railway, brought out of the valley. And to make a long story short, Harry Hammond, who is our founding father, the patriarch of the Hammond family, met with some United States soldiers, and they asked for a ride out of the valley, and wow. Light bulb went off.
Yeah.
And he thought, wow, I can make a little bit of money out of this, right? So in the beginning, in around 1945 is when we were founded, we started giving rides on the steep train in and out of the valley for a little bit of money on the weekends, and that progressed over the years. And you know, a lot of years, because this is our 74th year of business this year.
Wow.
And so then Philip's son took over in the 90s, and around the millennium Philip's son took over, and then now we're in the third generation, and you know, a lot of expansion happened around the year 2000 with the new cable car. A Skyway got put in the 50s, a new Skyway got put in, 2.8 kilometers of eco-friendly raised boardwalk. We have a new steep railway, which is put in about 3 years ago, which is the steepest train in the world. We have retail offering, food offering. We see 1.1 million people a year at Scenic World. And so about 3 years ago, the third generation took over, which is Anthea Hammond, who is our managing director, and her brother, David Hammond, were joint managing directors. And about a year and a half ago, David left to move into Hammond Holdings, which is the business that the parent company of Scenic World, and okay. now runs the business on her own.
Right.
So that's where we are today.
Yeah.
And we employ just over 190 people at Scenic World.
That's fantastic, Chris. That's, it's an impressive operation.
Thank you.
I know, well respected, and I mean, you are premier tourist destination for us up in here mountains, and you know, it's congratulations to see that growth. And for those of you who've been reading the headlines recently, you'll know that Scenic World have also now won the contract for the Sydney Harbour Bridge climb as well, and there's other offerings around zoos and whatever in place as well. So this is an expanding business. It's a good business, and more importantly, it's a family and a very kind of ethically sustainable business as well, which is a fantastic combination. Chris, can you talk to the staff improvement program that you guys have been recognized for running? A lot of companies do them. Not all of them do them very well. I think pay a little bit of lip service to it because they feel they have to. But I know for you guys it's different. It's more core, more fundamental to the business. Where did it come from, Chris?
Yeah, so we started our awards and recognition program probably about 2010 or so, when we started you know, staff free lunches, massages, free yoga at Scenic World. We have a site-wide bonus program. And that gave us a lot of engagement with our people. But even with that, even with, you know, sharing a lot with our people, giving them things like at work that really make it happy, a happy place for them to work in, we still felt like we weren't quite there. You know, we realized there was more to getting the best out of people than just free lunches and a back rub, really.
Yeah.
We started to realize they needed a purpose. And I don't know if you've seen Simon Sinek, but we talk a lot here about the why and your why statement.
Yep.
And so in that, we found a purpose in customer experience. And so we really, really focused on our customer experience and making it bigger than just work and what you do, but creating memories for people and creating smiles and really giving people a purpose in their work. And what was born from that is something even greater.
Yeah.
Because we found that customer experience, even though it was a great initiative and gave us a why, it still didn't drive it home the way we wanted.
Okay.
And culture is what was born from that. And we really started working on culture from this point.
Sure. Chris... I guess the lead on for that then is what's the reaction been? I mean, that's fantastic to hear, but what's the reaction been like from staff?
Yeah.
Long-term staff and maybe new people joining. Do you see that change?
It's maybe a controversial point, but it's very interesting. As my view of it is that people think a lot of times because you have a high-performing culture where you invest in your people a lot, the dramatics or the drama in the day-to-day life of a working environment will go away. And my experience is that's just not the case. The people love it, but when you're in a fear-based culture, in a culture where you don't have a voice, people have a tendency to go silent, yeah. And they don't voice their opinion, yeah. And then it all builds up, and then they explode, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Like, you're missing your pin, yeah. And you're losing your mind, you're losing your pin. Yeah. Where here, we find that our managers and leaders are constantly having day-to-day conversations about stuff that matters, about people's personal lives. You know, that old adage that you don't bring your stuff to work, we just don't follow that here. There's too much that happens in your life that you can't, it can't not impact you at work. So we find that we actually have more small drama here, right? Yeah. We're communicating, and that's the key. Communication is constantly happening between us and our people.
Yeah.
And what is built from that is trust.
Yeah.
And when people start to trust that you have their best interest in mind and that you're going to do the right thing, then you've really got something. And it is. We're a family-owned business. It's like a family, right? There's no family where it's utopia.
Yeah.
Things happen, right?
Certainly not.
Yeah, so we fight. Yep. We argue.
Yep.
But we have a unified direction, and we're all on the same page.
But it's constructive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Things don't have a tendency never to get to that very dramatic point where, you know, people walk out and they're screaming and shouting. Yeah. So we've already talked about things early on.
Yeah. And you've highlighted, Chris, I think something I can, you know, testify numerous occasions, companies I've worked for, where there's either been fantastic communication, so therefore I think that adds to that thing of, you know, working for a company though with that certain X factor.
Yeah.
And I think it often is because communication channels are really good, both, you know, always. Mm. But often where communication channels are very poor, or you feel, as you've said, well, I won't say anything because I know I'm going to get slammed down.
Yeah.
I've been there myself. It leads to bigger problems, and it leads to a really bad, a really bad kind of ethos within the workplace.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
communication's not just verbal, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What you're saying, what you're driving for, what you're writing, you know, the decisions you make as a business.
Yep.
You know, you have no idea how you're impacting people when the decisions you make overall. So communication is very
important. Yeah, sure. Chris, at the end of the day, you know, you're responsible for a large and ever-expanding operation here, and you've got some firm, you know, business objectives you have to achieve every day. How do you deal with that, along with this kind of team culture and this kind of work ethic that you've developed here? Where, you know, are the lines you draw? How does this kind of all happen for you?
Yeah. Look, I'm a big believer. I'm not sure who said it, but I like the quote, culture eats strategy. So culture is first, right? And what are the lines? I mean, look, when you get in a very high-performing culture and it becomes personal, you do have to draw lines. You know, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not equipped to get that deep into people's personal lives. But I do know that if people are allowed to be individuals, be creative, I work in it under something called what I call freedom in a box. So I manage loosely, and I give people freedom in this box, and it allows them to make mistakes. I'm a big believer in mistakes, and there's great learning in mistakes. And so if you set these boundaries for people to have this freedom, they're going to make mistakes that aren't going to cost the business millions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
The key is that when people do make mistakes, it's how constructive are you? How is the learning happening? How do you learn from it? Are you making mistakes more than once?
Yeah.
I believe that middle management is the guts of a business. Like, the people that you invest in, your middle managers, it's so important, because they're really what drives your business. At the top, you know, I myself and the Hammonds and other executives in the business are setting strategy.
Yeah.
But it's really up to the people at the middle to bring it home.
Okay.
You know, I've got five reports.
Yeah.
I've got people who report to me who have 30 people reporting out through them.
Yeah.
So they've got a bigger job, more hands-on job than I
do. Than you do, yeah. Mm. But at the same time, I think what you've been saying, Chris, is you feel at all levels that you're all interconnected. And probably most importantly that, you know, those workers, I know you have a lot of temporary seasonal workers at times, that they feel that they have a voice and a kind of a footprint, or they're part of the footprint. I think that's really the point.
Yeah, I think we haven't always done that well. Yeah, and I think now, we might drive a certain initiative from the middle of the business or the top of the business, or you might, some of the top of the business might say they want this to happen, but it doesn't have traction at the bottom of the business or as it works down through levels. And so we've really done a lot of work on what we call a unified sense of direction and making sure that we make a decision at the top and everybody throughout the business can see how their impact directly relates to the initiative at the top, the vision from the top of the business.
Chris, that's great. Chris, we've spoken when we were kind of introducing ourselves about, you know, Peter and I, our background with the certification and this whole notion of competence versus qualification alone. Mm. It's a big subject and probably a whole separate interview in itself. But Chris, do you sense that you're developing a more competent workforce as a result of these things you're doing, and particularly this kind of staff excellence programs that you're driving, beyond just hiring people who may be technically very good at their job? Are they coming out of it feeling that, and do you feel more confident that they are truly competent in terms of their environment?
Yeah, I do. I think humans are pretty amazing when they're, you know, how can you hire someone to do the same job, but someone just does it better? And I think it's because they feel alive and they feel useful. You know, you can hire the same two people with the same skill set and one can fail and one can flourish, and it all depends on the environment.
Yeah.
And I think the environment 100 sets that up. I see a lot of, I think this type of talk that we're having right now needs to have a stronger presence at the board level in business.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
It's not implemented in strategy.
No, you're right. And that's why Peter runs his business.
I think it's the future.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have a voice of the people and the voice of culture at the board level.
Yeah. So why is it getting mixed? Why is it getting missed?
Well, I think there's a changing of the guards. I don't want to upset anybody, but I think it's generational gaps. You know, people who are the baby boom era, they grew up with different values from their parents. I'm Gen X, and it's getting more soft skills as we go along, and you know Gen Y and younger now. They get a bad rap, but they want meaning in their work.
Yes, that's very true.
And my parents didn't really have that. It was about steady income. They'd stay in jobs for 25 years. That doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Kids want experience.
Yeah.
You know, I shouldn't say kids. People in their
30s. No, but I know what you mean, And there was a report. In fact, I was listening to it over the weekend on the ABC, and they were talking about, you know, that younger generation now having 10, 12 different careers, and they're all completely legitimate careers. I think this idea of you know, you and I are probably similar age of well, you know, if you jump around too many jobs, maybe this person's a bit risky. But now the fact is that someone's going to have 4 or 5 different jobs in their early 20s, and that's not a bad thing. But
I agree.
We've got to embrace it.
And I think it's even further than that.
Yeah,
I think we're moving to a future where you don't even have a job, meaning you're a freelancer, you're a contractor, and people will just hire you based on needs. It'll be internet-based, and there's a lot of work sites that already have that up and running. Freelancer.com, GoWork, where you can sign up for next to nothing and bring people in, and then they're done. You just move around.
To be honest, that's kind of how I'm working. So I agree. And it is, and it's a fundamental shift and a fundamental change. We could keep talking for a long time about that, but that's good insight, Chris. Chris, I suppose my final questions, I want to steer back to some of your early comments. It's great from a staff perspective, but primarily you're a tourist destination, so the customer experience is key. Have you noted through feedback how customers customers feel about this? Do they come out with a sense of, wow, that was great? And the staff, you know, they were just so super friendly and engaged.
This has been one of our greatest attributes over the last 10 years. We've figured out a long time ago that our experience was actually directly connected to the return on investment. When we gave a better experience and we were actually letting less, we actually decided to let less people into our business, less customers into our business, however, create a greater experience and give people more space. Our ticket sales came down, but our satellite areas, such as retail and food and beverage, increased. So our revenue stayed the same, but our overall, you know, this day and age, you can't have, you know, we've got a 4.5 TripAdvisor ranking out there. We've got a really good rapport with our guests, but you can't, you know, the damage that bad reviews can do. And bad reviews go viral.
Yeah, absolutely. Damage,
the marketing power of that.
One bad review in 100 can cost you.
Well, I always say, if one person's taking the time to give a bad review, how many people have you impacted negatively, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in a different age now. 10 years ago, you could get away with giving a bad experience, especially up here in the mountain, and, you know, people wouldn't find out, and they'd still come here.
Yeah,
those days were
gone. That's right.
So we see a tremendous value, and we feel that customer experience is actually a byproduct of culture.
Okay.
You know, you can train till the cows come home in customer experience, but if people don't feel valued, if people aren't motivated, you know, I think for a lot of years we got great customer service, but we were forcing it on people. I'm just starting to learn that people need to want to give great service because they want to, and that's something bigger, and that's culture, that's your why.
And that's maybe something we can just briefly explore. So this is more than just training, because I think the traditional view is, whether it's the customer service team or someone in the business says, okay, well, you know, the CEO says, okay, well, we're going to, you know, put the staff on a customer service course.
Yeah.
I've ticked that box. And, yep, I did that. Great. And we're now going to have excellent experience. But it's of course, not that simple, is it?
No, it's the quote is, if you're not serving the customer, you better be serving someone who is.
Yeah.
And that starts at the top. Everybody in this business has a customer, whether it be an external customer or an internal customer. So our accounting team has a customer, which is our frontline staff. Our maintenance team has a customer, which are frontline staff.
Yep.
You know, so everybody has a customer, and you need to understand that we're all in customer service. It's not a department. And a lot of times businesses have customer service training just for the front line.
That's right.
But I believe you can have great customer service without customer service training.
Yep.
People just need to feel valued and be motivated. And they'll give this organic type of service that's not robotic. This is what I have to say.
Yeah,
it's just me being a kind person and me having the awareness to help people when I see people in need.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of feel, and you do get that, don't you, with organizations, you feel the person is nice and pleasant, but they're following a prescript. They're following a kind of a robotic process, and you can't go outside of that. But I think what you're seeing, what you've built here in Scenic World and your satellite operations, is this culture that says it's much broader than that.
Yeah.
And we're great people, but we treat people as humans, and we work it through.
You said it perfectly. Yeah. The word is feel.
Yeah.
And I believe there is something bigger than just the words that come out of my mouth. There is there's an energy about this place, right? There's a feel to this place. Our staff get it. They feel it.
Yep.
People come here. Yeah, we have a beautiful view, and we have these great cable cars. It's an amazing attraction.
It
can easily be poor.
Yeah.
And it's about humans, right? And how you feel when you leave and when you come. Our job is, no matter what's happened to someone before they come here, to turn that smile or that frown upside down and make sure they leave here differently when they arrived.
That's fantastic, Chris. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I know from first-hand knowledge that people do come away thinking that was a really great experience. Chris, I guess the last point is, you know, this is all great. Are there resources, if someone's listening to this and goes, you know, I'm inspired by, you know, what Chris is saying, how do I start? Where did you start? Where is a...
I think it's really important to take stock and measure where you're at. And so we use a company called Human Synergistics, which measures our culture, both as a collective culture, but also on an individual level. From our team leaders up through our executives, we measure how you feel as an individual within our culture. And we also measure how your peers see you within the culture. And then everybody in the business has to measure it on where our culture is at. And we've learned a lot. Look, we're not anywhere close to the finish line. We've got a lot of work to do. done. We've learned a lot of things about our culture that we didn't know. So I think measurement is great. I think Human Synergistics is a great company to work with. We hired a culture consultant who works here 3 days a week.
Okay.
And her name is Pamela Lowe. And she's helped us tremendously with, you know, knowing what to do, what moves to make next. You know?
Yeah.
So we're always thinking culture first. And so that's a great place to start.
Yeah.
So, measuring and just taking stock where you're at.
So really, I think what you're saying is you know, recognize that it's something that needs to be built. So you go out, find an appropriate resource and get some external help to come in and you know.
100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't try and do this all yourselves.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Chris, that's really inspiring. And I really appreciate your time. You're very busy at the moment. So with that, Chris, I'm going to say thanks very much. And my thanks once again to Chris and the fabulous team at Cynic World for giving me the opportunity to come in and discover more about their award-winning organization and share that with you, the listener. Well, as with all our podcasts, if this has inspired you to find out more, then please don't hesitate to contact myself, Ed Balfour, either through LinkedIn or indeed through our website, holtmanprofessionalservices.com.au, and let's start a conversation. So with that, thanks once again for listening, and stay tuned for our next podcast on helping you.